Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, 10th chapter, verses 13 to 33, 6th canto, 11th chapter, verses 1 to 27. Atamiro vajram bhutyam yanyam itam vishvakarmana mune shakti virutsikta bhagavate jasambhita vritta devaganai sarai vikajendra payashokata stuyamanamanikanais chailokyam hashayam nipa. Translation by Srila Prabhupada of verses 13 and 14 of the 10th chapter. Thereafter, King Indra very firmly took up the thunderbolt manufactured by Vishvakarma from the bones of Dadichi, charged with the exalted power of Dadichi Muni and enlightened by the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Indra rode on the back of his carrier, Airavata, surrounded by all the demigods, while all the great sages offered him praise. Thus he shone very beautifully, pleasing the three worlds, as he rode off to kill Dhritarashtra. What do you remember from last Thursday's class on 9th and 10th, end of the 9th chapter and beginning of 10th chapter? Yes, Adi Purush?
First one should protect one's wealth, then one's religion.
First one should protect one's wealth, then one's religion, and then one's... Wait a minute. I think you got it backwards. First one should protect one's life. And then...
If you don't protect wealth, please protect your...
First you protect your life, and then you protect your religious principles, and then your wealth, is the what I remember. Yeah, like that. First Atma, and then Dharma. And you remember the Sanskrit? Atmanam, Dharma, and then Artha. Sarvato. Acha. First the body. It's not a verse, it's a quote from... Yeah, okay, we can look it up. Which, from verse 4 in the 10th chapter. Then look it up. Atmanam. Atmanam, Sarvato, Rakshet. Tato dharmam, tato dhanam. It's in the purport of verse 4. First the body, and then the religious principles, and then your wealth. Okay? What else do we remember? Anything from the 9th? Yes.
This is... a conversation ancient between the demigods where...
Yes.
They were quite motivated in their approach. Please...
Yes. So the demigods approached Dadichi that he should give his bones for their benefit, so they can protect their bones.
So obviously the beginning, Dadichi was not too convinced.
He wasn't convinced.
But finally, the demigods argued, and since Dadichi is quite pious,
yes,
he understood the Lord's plan behind it all, so he did it.
So he did. He said, "All right, I will give you my bones." Yes, Marangopa. Okay, if one is advanced in knowledge, he should always be prepared to sacrifice anything for a better cause.
Can you say the example of Bhakti
Tirthamaraj? Yes, Bhakti Tirthamaraj. Yes, he had a... Yeah, I gave the example of Bhakti Tirthamaraj, our godbrother, who had cancer, and he had the tumor in his foot at first. And they said they would have to amputate his foot. So he said he would like to take all the karma of... the devotees in the movement who had problems, women, children, gurukulis, and put it in his leg, suffer the karma in his leg, and then when they cut off his leg, then all that karma would be cut off. That was his prayer. But then at the end, his whole body was full of cancer, so he said, "Let me suffer for all the karma of everyone." Actually, I think he didn't discriminate at the end. It was the whole world. And especially the devotees. So, okay, anything from the 9th chapter? That was long ago. Very long ago. Remember, okay, I'll give you a hint. The demigods, again, were praying in a motivated way, and the Lord replied.
That was what we heard on Thursday, the end of the ninth chapter. The Lord was replying to the demigods. Yes, what was his reply? Okay, Damana Krishna. Yes, he said, you should just ask for the opportunity to engage in devotional service. Yes. And Lila Shuka, is that what you had to say?
Yes,
the demigods were coming to the Lord to kill their enemies, their enemy. And the Lord was saying, this is kripana. If you think these material assets are everything, this is the goal of life, then they are kripana. And if I give what the kripana wants, then I'm also a fool. Why should I give something that the kripana wants? And in verse 50, a devotee who knows the science of devotional service will never instruct a foolish person to engage in fruitive activities. So he's preaching to them for a few verses. And then he tells, go to Dadichi and beg his bones. So then Dadichi, he argues with them. And then he replies in a very beautiful verses, verse 8, O demigods, one who has no compassion for humanity in its suffering and does not sacrifice his impermanent body for the higher causes of religious principles is certainly pitied by the immovable beings. So Srila Prabhupada in his purports is urging everyone in this world who has a comfortable condition should join the Krishna conscious movement and elevate humanity. That is the best welfare work. Sacrifice your life. Prabhupada is urging, sacrifice your life. This life, this one life, just sacrifice for others. So then the Dichi, he sacrificed his life. He gave up his life in yoga trance. And now Indra, they took his bones, because his bones, why were his bones so special? Okay, they had the potency of Narayana Kavacha. So now Indra is taking up these very special bones, which are infused with the exalted power of Dadichi and enlightened by the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he's riding out to battle. So now we'll hear these verses. Verse 15, my dear King Parikshit, as Rudra, being very angry at Antaka, Yamraj, had formerly run toward Antaka to kill him, Indra angrily and with great force attacked Vritrasura, who was surrounded by the leaders of the demoniac armies. Does anybody know this story where I don't know it. Rudra, Lord Shiva, gets angry at Yamraj and runs to kill him. Nobody knows the story. Okay, we'll go on. Thereafter, at the end of Satya Yuga and beginning of Treta Yuga, a fierce battle took place between the demigods and demons on the bank of the Narmada. Purport, here in the Narmada does not mean Narmada River in India. The five sacred rivers in India, Ganga, Jamuna, Narmada, Kaveri, and Krishna, are all celestial. Like the Ganga River, the Narmada River also flows in the higher planetary systems. The battle between the demigods and demons took place in the higher planets. The words Pratama Yuge mean in the beginning of the first millennium, that is to say, the beginning of the Vaivasvata Manvantara. So that was 28 yuga cycles ago. So Prabhupada calculates in the purport, one can calculate how long ago it took place, since each millennium consists of 4,300,000 years. We are now in the 28th millennium. Some 120,400,000 years have passed since the battle took place on the bank of the river Narmada. So this is in Vaivasvatamanu now. Interesting. We've gone from Chakshusha. Remember, Daksha is born in Chakshusha Manu. Now we're in the Vaivasvatamanu. We've traveled quite a distance from Chakshusha to, yes, the same figure. That's when Bhagavad Gita was spoken, 120,400,000 years ago. Interesting. To the sun god Vivashvan. That's the beginning of Manu, the beginning of this Manu. So obviously he got the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita at the beginning of his life when he was new. Yeah, at least 120,400,000 years ago. Because it couldn't be before that, though, because he wasn't born, was he? Okay. So we'll just read through the rest of the verses up to 28. O king, when all the Asuras came to the battlefield, headed by Vritrasura, they saw King Indra carrying the thunderbolt, surrounded by Rudras, Vasus, Adityas, Ashwini Kumaras, Pitas, Vahanis, Maruts, Ribus, Sadhyas, and Vishudevs. Surrounded by his company, Indra shone so brightly, his effulgence was intolerable to the demons. Many hundreds and thousands of demons, semi-demons, yakshas, rakshasas, man-eaters, and others, headed by Sumali and Mali, resisted the armies of King Indra, which even death personified cannot easily overcome. Among the demons were Namu, Chishambara, Anarva, Dvimurdha, Rishava, Asura, Hayagriva, Shankushira, Vipachiti, Ayomaka, Puloma, Vishaparva, Praheti, Heti, and Utkala. Roaring tumultuously and fearlessly like lions, these invincible demons, all dressed in golden ornaments, gave pain to the demigods with weapons like clubs, bludgeons, arrows, barbed darts, mallets, and lances. Armed with lances, tridents, axes, swords, and other weapons like shataknis and bhushundis, the demons attacked from different directions and scattered all the chiefs of the demigod armies. Does anybody recognize any names here of these demons? Vishaparva. We know Vishaparva, right? The father of Sharmishta. And if you read Mahabharata, then you'll remember a lot more. Sumali and Mali and Praheti, Heti, Utkala. 24. As the stars in the sky cannot be seen when covered by dense clouds, the demigods, being completely covered by networks of arrows falling upon them one after another, could not be seen. The showers of various weapons and arrows released to kill the soldiers of demigods did not reach them because of the demigods acting quickly cut the weapons into thousands of pieces in the sky. As their weapons and mantras decreased, how does your mantra decrease, I wonder? The demons began showering mountain peaks, trees, and stones upon the demigod soldiers. But the demigods were so powerful and expert, they nullified all these weapons by breaking them to pieces in the sky as before. When the soldiers of the demons, commanded by Vritrasura, saw that the soldiers of King Indra were quite well, having not been injured at all by their volleys of weapons, not even by the trees, stones, and mountain peaks, the demons were very much afraid. When insignificant persons use rough words to cast false angry accusations against saintly persons, their fruitless words do not disturb the great personalities. Similarly, all the efforts of the demons against the demigods, who were favorably situated under the protection of Krishna, were futile. So this is, there are many examples of how this is true. So one of these examples is in the purport. There is a Bengali saying that if a vulture curses a cow to die, the curse will not be effective. Similarly, accusations made by demoniac persons against devotees of Krishna cannot have any effect. The demigods are devotees of Lord Krishna, therefore the curses of the demons were futile. Does anybody else have another example how this is true? There's another one which Prabhupada always gave about people criticizing the devotees. Yes, okay, Durvasa Muni. I'm thinking of more like a proverb. Yes, Madhavendrapuri. What a goat will not eat, and what a madman will not speak. Okay, I don't know if that applies here. Aipush? Yes, that's it. The dogs may bark, but the caravan will pass. Dogs are barking and the caravan's passing, but they don't care for the dogs. And Prabhupada used this many, many times. So Srila Prabhupada, one time he was talking with Jivikam Maharaj, that in a village, if a saintly person is in the village, nobody cares for him. But if somebody comes from outside, then he will get so much honor. And so Dr. Patel says, so this will create some difficulty for your movement. Prabhupada said, we don't care. Caravan will pass, let the dogs bark. And Dr. Patel says, but the dogs may bite. Prabhupada says, no, barking dogs never bites. They simply make a show. Neither can they bite. Yes, we have some dogs, Brijit Bihari's dogs. They only bark, they never bite. So that means that the people, they criticize, but they don't actually do anything. And as Prabhupada says, of course, his favorite word is rascal, muta, people who criticize. He says, just like a child may speak so many things. If I have, I have this 11-year-old daughter, sometimes her mouth will just go, you know, and no rhyme, no reason. She just likes to talk. She just likes to move her mouth. And if you listen, if you take it seriously, then you just go mad because there's no rhyme or reason to it. This is how a child speaks sometimes. So Prabhupada says, yes, a child, you don't take it seriously. So these rascals, they see so many things, but we don't take them seriously. Like some people, they would say brainwashing. This Hare Krishna is brainwashing movement. And Prabhupada says, yes, we are brain giving. We are washing the brain and giving good brains. And so these are, but he says, we don't care. So this is the same thing here, that all the demons, they could do nothing against the demigods. They're like the dogs barking and the demigods are the care of them. So verse 29, the asuras, who are never devotees of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, lost their pride in fighting when they found all their endeavors futile. Leaving aside their leader, even in the very beginning of the fight, they decided to flee because all their prowess had been taken away by the enemy. Seeing his army broken and all the asuras, even those known as great heroes, fleeing the battlefield out of intense fear, Dhritarashtra, who was truly a great-minded hero, smiled and spoke the following words. Verse 31. According to his position, time, and circumstance, Dhritarashtra, the hero among heroes, spoke words that were much to be appreciated by thoughtful men. He called to the heroes of the demons, O Viprachiti, O Namuchi, O Paloma, O Maya, Anarva, and Shambhara, please hear me and do not flee. Dhritarashtra said, all living entities who have taken birth in this material world must die. So what is that verse in Bhagavad Gita? Jatasya hi duvo mrityur duvam janma mitasya. Sir, surely no one in this world has found any means to be saved from death. Even providence has not provided a means to escape it. Under the circumstances, death being inevitable, if one can gain promotion to the higher planetary systems and be always celebrated here by dying a suitable death, what man will not accept such a glorious death? So this is, Prabhupada talks about this in the purport. And actually for the Kshatriyas, one very important principle was fame. Something that all the Kshatriyas want is to be famous. So one is fame. Prabhupada says, similar advice was given by Krishna to Arjuna. My dear Arjuna, do not desist from fighting. If you gain victory, you'll enjoy a kingdom. And if you die, you'll be elevated to the heavenly planets. So this is, Prabhupada says, everyone should be ready to die while performing glorious deeds. A glorious person is not meant to meet death like cats and dogs. So I have another... actually, there's nice examples. Does anybody have an example of a devotee dying like this in the battle of with the demons? Actually, I have one. My god sister, she was in preaching in Africa, and her name, what is her name? I forgot. Ladini, I think her name was. And so she was preaching, and the first, there was a revolution going on in Nigeria, and there was two armies fighting, and one of the armies was president, or the one of them was Johnson. So she was trying to give him advice that he was killing so many people, even his own people. And she was saying, oh, you know, this is not good, you should not kill so many people. So then he came with his soldiers to kill all the devotees. And they took all the devotees out of the temple, and he said to the ladies, we won't shoot the ladies. You can go that side. So he was ready to shoot the men, and she went in front, and she grabbed the gun, and she said, shoot me first, don't shoot them. And so he shot her first. But she was trying to protect the devotees. So this is one example. Another one is Bhakti Tirtha Swami, again. He wrote in his last letter these words about dying a hero's death. He wanted to die a hero's death. He said, I want to offer my apologies to all of you that I have offended especially due to my often radical and unorthodox nature. I want to thank you so much for helping my life to be successful by allowing me in my own small way to offer myself up in sacrifice, somewhat in the mood of Vasudeva Dutta, to try to be servant of the servant. Only by your constant prayers and constant forcing of Srila Prabhupada in keeping me somewhat focused was I able to pass the final test. So I leave you with my funny mantra with its different variations. Quote, we are all spiritual warriors who are blessed by the best, and we have a duty to reach out more to help each other to pass their test. Unquote. In order to successfully deal with the pains of maturation, birth pains, and our own battle of Kurukshetra, all of us really need more of each other's protection, and that protection manifests more profoundly in how we allow ourselves to be conduits for Krishna's and Srila Prabhupada's mercy. The experience of leaving the body is frightening and scary at times, full of surprises, pain, and inconveniences. But I also understand that so much of my suffering is just a token due to Srila Prabhupada's mercy. When I look at all the people that Srila Prabhupada used me to assist in various ways, all the inconveniences and suffering are surely worth it. So I will now go ahead and join some of those who have already left and help them in making arrangements for so many of you. Isn't this powerful global interplanetary family that we have so wonderful? That was in his last letter. There's a lot.
What is the last two lines?
Powerful, inter-global, interplanetary, means different planets, family that we have, so wonderful. So that was his last words when he died. Verse 33, there are two ways to meet a glorious death, and both are very rare. One is to die after performing mystic yoga, especially bhakti yoga, by which one can control the mind and living force and die absorbed in thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The second is to die on the battlefield, leading the army and never showing one's back. These two kinds of death are recommended in the Shastra as glorious. So, anybody have any questions on chapter 10 before we go into chapter 11? Or any discussion? Or any examples? For Srila Prabhupada, he was the most glorious example. He was laying on his bed and he couldn't eat, he couldn't move, but he was speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. He was dictating Srimad Bhagavatam until his last breath. He was speaking, someone was holding the microphone, somebody was reading the commentaries for him, and he was translating Bhagavatam and preaching. And I have tapes, like even 2 days before he left, I have like tapes of Srila Prabhupada. And people are coming to see him, and Prabhupada is asking, how are you? And he's like, he can't do anything, but he's concerned for other people. He's thinking of their welfare. So that was Srila Prabhupada, was another example. Okay, no questions on chapter 10? We'll go on to chapter 11. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, Vritrasura, the commander-in-chief of the demons, advised his lieutenants in the principles of religion. But the cowardly demoniac commanders, intent upon fleeing the battlefield, were so disturbed by fear they could not accept his words. I guess preaching on the battlefield is not easy. You're trying to, you know, here the arrows are coming after them, they're running away, and he's saying, don't, stop, don't go. But they're not listening. Anybody ever try to preach to somebody who's very afraid? Intense fear. I can't. It's very difficult. O King Pariksit, the demigods, taking advantage of a favorable opportunity presented by time, attacked the army of the demons from the rear and began driving away the demoniac soldiers, scattering them here and there as if their army had no leader. Seeing the pitiable condition of his soldiers, Vritrasura, the best of the asuras, who was called Indrashatru, enemy of Indra, was very much aggrieved. Unable to tolerate such reverses, he stopped and forcefully rebuked the demigods, speaking the following words in an angry mood. So first he's chastising the demons, and now he's chastising the demigods. Both. Both sides he's chastising. O demigods, these demoniac soldiers have taken birth uselessly. Indeed, They have come from the bodies of their mothers, exactly like stool. What is the benefit of killing such enemies from behind while they are running in fear? One who considers himself a hero should not kill an enemy who is afraid of losing his life. Such killing is never glorious, nor can it promote one to the heavenly planets. So I thought this was interesting because he's preaching to the demigods about promotion to the heavenly planets, but they're already there, like, you know, what they don't have to worry about getting promoted. Those who, oh, those who run away, okay. Right. Such, well, he says such killing is never glorious. You know, they're killing the ones.
From their side, it will not glorious for demigods.
Yeah.
It will not also not promote
cha-cha.
Those who will die.
Okay, that could be. Okay, nor those who are running away cannot go to the heavenly planets. Okay. Does Vishnath, I guess that's not such an important thing. Okay, purport. Vritrasya rebuked both the demigods and demoniac soldiers because the demons were running in fear of their lives, the demigods were killing them from behind. The actions of both were abominable. When a fight takes place, the opposing parties must be prepared to fight like heroes. A hero never runs from the field of battle. He always fights face to face, determined to gain victory or lay down his life in the fight. That is heroic. Killing an enemy from behind is also inglorious. When an enemy turns his back and runs in fear of his life, he should not be killed. This is the etiquette of military science. So in the Vedic times, they had etiquette for fighting. But nowadays, there's no etiquette. Yes?
Even though, since it's bad, the kings there, when they go for battle, like the queen, they put something like, either you win or don't see me back.
Yes, the queen puts something on the king. Either you win or you don't come back. And there was one queen that her husband came back defeated and she wouldn't allow him in the palace. He says, it's me, it's your husband, I came back defeated. She said, no, my husband will not come back defeated. It must be an imposter. Must be somebody, it's not my husband. Don't open the gate. So this was the Kshatriya spirit. Now they have no etiquette, right? In military, is there any etiquette? Who is a soldier? That one was a soldier. He's not with Guru Sevananda. Has he already gone to Govardhan? Or something? Okay. He's catching up. Yeah, he was a soldier. Anybody here? Oh, and so was Patri. Oh, our soldiers are not here today. To tell us what is the, if there is any etiquette on the battlefield, yeah, between the two sides. Nowadays, I don't think there's anything. They kill old ladies, they kill children. Yeah.
When I was flying to India, I met one person who was from Bulgaria. He was paid by NATO to fight in Iraq. And he said that there were children with guns, like 5, 8 years old.
5, 8 year old children.
They were just killed. They were just, he said, I didn't look, I just saw dollars and I was.
There's children with guns.
Yeah, they just would play the children. They said they were cleaning village after village. They didn't care what is
just killing everybody. So there's no etiquette. There is no etiquette. The military etiquette. So in the purport, Vritrasura insulted the demoniac soldiers, comparing them to the stool of their mothers. Both stool and a cowardly son come from the abdomen of the mother. Vritrasura said there is no difference between them. A similar comparison was given by Tulsidas, who commented that his son and urine both come from the same channel. In other words, semen and urine both come from the genitals, but semen produces a child, whereas urine produces nothing. Therefore, if a child is neither a hero nor a devotee, he is not a son, but urine. Chanaka Pandit says, Korta putrena jatena yona vitvana dharmika kanena chakshisha kimva chakshupida vikevalam. What is the use of a son who is neither glorious nor devoted to the Lord? Such a son is like a blind eye which simply gives pain but cannot help one see. So this is Chanaka saying. Prabhupada says that you can... If you have a blind eye, then it only gives pain if you have cataract. So therefore they take it out, and then they put a false eye. And there's this one devotee in Mayapur, he has a false eye. So sometimes he takes it out and shows the kids, so here's my eye, puts it back in. So this is like a sun that's useless, that you cannot see with it. So there's another saying, Pucha Shatrur Apandita. A son is an enemy if he is apandit, if he's not a pundit, if he's a rascal. There's another saying that Prabhupada quotes, Apandita. So verse 5, O insignificant demigods, if you truly have faith in your heroism, if you have patience in the cores of your hearts, and if you are not ambitious for sense gratification, please stand before me for a moment. These three things just hit me, you know. Why is he saying, if you have faith, okay, that we understand. If you have faith in your heroism, if you have patience, what does that mean? And if you're not ambitious for sense gratification, Stan, I guess when you're fighting, you can't think about sense gratification. And you have to be patient. Purport. Rebuking the demigods. Vritrasura challenged, O demigods, if you are actually heroes, stand before me now and try to show your prowess. If you do not wish to fight, if you're afraid of losing your lives, I'll not kill you. For unlike you, I am not so evil-minded as to kill persons who are neither heroic nor willing to fight. If you have faith in your heroism, please stand before me. So Vritrasura is insulting the demigods strongly to make them angry. That often we see in the fights in the Vedic times, they would insult each other first before fighting. You know any examples of this? They speak strong words. I think Krishna, he was calling Kalyavana a frog or something, or Poundraka. Yeah? Who was doing it?
Krishna.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And Duryodhana was inciting Drona to fight before the battle.
Even Bhishma.
And Bhishma, yes.
Bhishma.
Oh, Karna, yes. That was Shalva. Yeah, Shalva was criticizing Karna all the way. Because that was their deal. I'll be your charioteer, but I can say what I want. So in the battle, they fight with words as well as with swords. Then we'll read some more verses. Shukadeva Goswami said, Vritrasura, the angry and most powerful hero, terrified the demigods with his stout and strongly built body. When he roared with a resounding voice, nearly all living entities fainted. Shukadeva Goswami said, when all the demigods heard Vritrasura's tumultuous roar, which resembled that of a lion, they fainted and fell to the ground as if struck by thunderbolts. Well, so it sounds like he's getting it now. Just with his voice, he knocks them over. That's actually the beginning of the Battle of Kurukshetra also. Just the roar of Bhima and the roar of Hanuman on Arjuna's flag was enough for some soldiers to be finished and fall down. And also the conch shells of Krishna and Arjuna. Verse 8, as the demigods closed their eyes in fear, Vritrasura, taking up his trident and making the earth tremble with his great strength, trampled the demigods beneath his feet on the battlefield, the way a mad elephant tramples hollow bamboos in the forest. Seeing Vritrasura's disposition, Indra, the king of heaven, became intolerant and threw at him one of his great clubs, which are extremely difficult to counteract. However, as the club flew toward him, Vritrasura easily caught it with his left hand. O King Parikshit, the powerful Vritrasura, enemy of King Indra, angrily struck the head of Indra's elephant with that club, making a tumultuous sound on the battlefield. For this heroic deed, the soldiers on both sides glorified him. So it's just like a sporting event here. They're fighting, but actually it's like sports. You know, they cheer. Everybody's cheering for that one. That was really a wonderful feat of Vritrasura here, that he knocked over Indra's elephant. He caught the club, first of all, and then he used it to knock over Indra's elephant with Indra on top. Struck with the club by Vritrasura, like a mountain struck by a thunderbolt. The elephant Airavata, feeling great pain and spitting blood from its broken mouth, was pushed back 14 yards. In great distress, the elephant fell with Indra on its back. When he saw Indra's carrier elephant, thus fatigued and injured, and when he saw Indra morose because his carrier had been harmed in that way. The great soul of Dhritarashtra, following religious principles, refrained from again striking Indra with a club. Taking this opportunity, Indra touched the elephant with his nectar-producing hand, thus relieving the animal's pain and curing its injuries. Then the elephant and Indra both stood silently. Now, what is Indra feeling now? He's feeling, he's thinking, he's doubtful, he's defeated, he's ashamed, he's really finished. O king, when the great hero Dhritarashtra saw Indra, his enemy, killer of his brother, standing before him with a thunderbolt in his hand, desiring to fight, Dhritarashtra remembered how Indra had cruelly killed his brother. Thinking of Indra's sinful activities, he became mad with lamentation and forgetfulness. Laughing sarcastically, he spoke as follows. Shiva Dhritarashtra said, "He who has killed a Brahman, he who has killed his spiritual master, indeed, he who has killed my brother, is now, by good fortune, standing before me face to face as my enemy. Oh, most abominable one, when I pierce your stone-like heart with my trident, I shall be freed from my debt to my brother." So Dhritarashtra knows the history. I guess his father informed him before he sent him out to battle. He knows the history of Indra, and he knows the history of the thunderbolt weapon as well. We'll find out later. So Jiva Goswami uses the example of Dhritarashtra as showing the appearance of bhakti even in a demon. We'll hear later on how he speaks pure devotional service. Today, actually, we'll hear that. And what should we... We should understand that bhakti can appear, she's independent, she can appear anywhere. And Dhritarashtra, now he has no fear because he knows he's going to be released from the body and go back to Godhead. So why is he chastising Indra so heavily now, as if he's going to kill Indra? But what is his real intention? Maivindapuri.
To stir him up to fight.
Yes, make him angry. So he'll fight and kill him, actually. He wants Indra to kill him. So verse 15. "Only for the sake of living in the heavenly planets, you killed my elder brother, a self-realized, sinless, qualified Brahmin who had been appointed your chief priest. He was your spiritual master, but although you entrusted him with the performance of your sacrifice, you later mercilessly severed his head from his body, the way one butchers an animal." So Bharijan Prabhu makes a comment that even Rakshasas don't kill their guru. So Dhritarashtra is saying, Indra, now he has done this, and he's going to say that in the next verse, he will not even be burned, his body will be eaten. He won't get a very nice Vedic death ceremony. Verse 16. "Indra, you are bereft of all shame, mercy, glory, and good fortune, deprived of these good qualities by the reactions of your fruitive activities. You are to be condemned even by the man-eaters, Rakshasas. Now I shall pierce your body with my trident, and after you die with great pain, even fire will not touch you. Only the vultures will eat your body." So he'll be too impure, so impure that fire will not touch him. Fire will refuse to burn his body. Verse 17. "You are naturally cruel. If the other demigods, unaware of my prowess, follow you by attacking me with raised weapons, I shall sever their heads with this sharp trident. With those heads, I shall perform a sacrifice to Bhairava and the other leaders of the ghosts, along with their hordes." So up to this point, he's speaking very heavily, and he's chastising and very choice words. And now from verse 18, there is a shift in his speaking. A big shift. So then he's shifting to himself. First he was concentrating on Indra, and now he's actually revealing, he's going to reveal his actual desire in his heart. Verse 18. "Ato hare me kulishena vira harta kamatya eva shiro yadika tatranina buddha balim pitaya manasinam pararaja papatse." Verse 18. "But if in this battle you cut off my head with your thunderbolt, and kill my soldiers, O Indra, O great hero, I shall take great pleasure in offering my body to other living entities, such as jackals and vultures. I shall thus be relieved of my obligations to the reactions of my karma. My fortune will be to receive the dust from the lotus feet of great devotees like Narada Muni. So all of a sudden, after chastising him, now he's completely the opposite. Yeah, okay, so you're not even, fire won't touch you. But then, if I'm killed, then I'll be very happy to offer my body to the vultures. Just like, what's going on? How come he changes like this? First he was speaking so chivalrously, like a kshatriya. Now he's speaking like a philosopher, and he's speaking like his Vaishnava nature is coming out. Do the acharyas say anything about this change here? No. Okay, look it up. So, purport, Srila Prabhupada quotes Narottam Das Thakur, explaining the mood of Vidrashara. Echai gosai jang uitaro das tasavada pararena mora panchagras. I am the servant of the six Goswamis, and the dust of their lotus feet provides my five kinds of food. So he wants the dust, the dust of the lotus feet of great devotees as his food. Oh, just imagine, in the middle of the battlefield, he just starts talking like, a Vaishnava always desires the dust of lotus feet of previous acharyas and Vaishnavas. Vitrashura was certain he would be killed in the battle with Indra because this was a desire of Lord Vishnu. He was prepared for death because he knew after his death he was destined to return home back to Godhead. This is a great destination, and it is achieved by the grace of a Vaishnava. Charya Vaishna Sheva Nishtar Payech Keba. No one has ever gone back to Godhead without being favored by a Vaishnava. In this verse, therefore, we find the words, Manas Vinam Pararaja Papatsye. I shall receive the dust of the lotus feet of great devotees. The words Manasinam refers to great devotees who always think of Krishna. They are always peaceful, thinking of Krishna, therefore they are called Dhira. Best example of such a devotee is Narada Muni. If one receives the dust of the lotus feet of Manasvi, great devotee, he certainly returns home back to Godhead. So Vitrasura has a huge body. It's almost covering the universe, so just imagine how much food it will provide for the vultures and other living entities. He's thinking, yes, I will sacrifice my body. They will all eat it very happily. And he's also showing detachment. So we saw this with the Dichi Muni. We saw who else was very detached in Srimad Bhagavatam like this. Yeah. Bhishma Dev was very detached, lying on the bed of arrows. Maharaj Prithu was detached, also giving up his body ahead of time in yoga. Yeah. Who? Rishabh Dev was detached. He didn't care what was happening. Who? Jada Bharat. Yes. Yes. Sibi. He was cutting off his flesh for food for the hawk. Yes. And Parikshit Maharaj, he didn't care. He got the news of his curse. He said, oh, very nice. This is very good news. So he wants the dust of the lotus feet. Why does he want the dust of the lotus feet of a devotee? What's the benefit? Should that be our only desire? Janame janame hoy ye abilash. Vina mahapada rajo bishekam. So that's a perfect quote. It's got the dust of the lotus feet in it. Vina para mahat. 5.12.12, yes. Because without the dust of the lotus feet, we cannot connect with the absolute truth. What other benefit from the dust of the lotus feet of the devotee? Here, in the purport, there is a benefit. Having the dust, yes. You go back to Godhead, yes. Everybody wants to go back to Godhead, right? Or does somebody want to stay here and preach? In the meantime. Okay, in the meantime, while we're waiting, it's a good idea, we can stay here and preach, but otherwise we want to go back to Godhead. Which place? Goloka. Goloka Vrindavan. That's where we want to go. Nothing less. But in the meantime, we'll stay here and preach. It might take us a few births. Okay? So hear the word Manasvinam. And guess who is called Manasvi? In the end of the 10th chapter, Vritrasura is called Manasvi as well. Vritrasura. Manasvinam. Great devotees who always think of Krishna. So in 6:10:31, Vitto Suram Stan Anugan Manasvi. Manasvi. Great-minded, or great devotees who always think of Krishna. This is Manasvi. Manasvi. So, verse 19. O king of the demigods, since I, your enemy, am standing before you, why don't you hurl your thunderbolt at me? Now he's preaching to Indra. Indra's a little bit doubtful now. So he's trying to convince him. Although your attack upon me with your club was certainly useless, like a request of money from a miser, the thunderbolt you carry will not be useless. You need to have no doubts about this. So this is quite an interesting turn of events. See the purport three lines down. Therefore, even though Indra stood with the thunderbolt to hurl against Vritrasura, he was doubtful, thinking the thunderbolt might also fail. Vritrasura, however, being a Vaishnava, assured Indra the thunderbolt would not fail, for Vritrasura knew it had been prepared in accordance with the instructions of Lord Vishnu. Although Indra had doubts, because he could not understand that Lord Vishnu's order never fails, Vritrasura understood Lord Vishnu's purpose. So this is very ironic here. The demon has more faith in Vishnu than the demigod. And he's preaching. He's preaching to Indra, have faith. Have faith in your thunderbolt. It will kill me. Don't worry. Can you just... How is he speaking on the battlefield? Purport. Vritrasura was eager to be killed by the thunderbolt manufactured according to Lord Vishnu's instructions because he was sure he would thus return home back to Godhead. He was simply waiting for the opportunity of the thunderbolts being released. In effect, therefore, Vritrasura told Indra, if you want to kill me, since I'm your enemy, take this opportunity, kill me, you will gain victory, and I shall go back to Godhead. Your deed will be equally beneficial for both of us. Do it immediately. You want to stay here and enjoy? I want to go back to Godhead, so just kill me. And so he was trying to make him angry at the beginning. That didn't work. So now he's trying a different approach. He's trying to make him have faith in his thunderbolt. And he's saying, go ahead, do it, use it. Just do it, do it. He's like really trying to egg him on. Verse 20, O Indra, King of Heaven, the thunderbolt you carry to kill me has been empowered by the prowess of Lord Vishnu and the strength of the Diji's austerities. Since you have come here to kill me in accordance with Lord Vishnu's order, there is no doubt that I shall be killed by the release of your thunderbolt. Lord Vishnu has sided with you. Therefore, your victory, opulence, and all good qualities are assured. So in the purport, Prabhupada explains who is being favored by Krishna here? Vritrasura. Why? Why is he being favored? He's saying Vishnu's on your side. So how is it he favoring Vritrasura? Yeah. Because he's more Krishna conscious, yeah. Okay, he will go back to Godhead and Indra will stay. The material world. So he's, and who will gain victory in the battle? Vritrasura. Yeah, so this is quite a different way of looking at victory and defeat. And who is being favored, like a materialistic person, if they look at this, what's happening here, they will say, no, actually Indra's the one. He's favored and he got victory. But Prabhupada is saying, no, it's the opposite. In the purport, Vritrasura not only assured King Indra the thunderbolt was invincible, but also encouraged Indra to use it against him as soon as possible. Vritrasura was eager to die with a stroke of the thunderbolt sent by Lord Vishnu so he could immediately return home back to Godhead. By hurling the thunderbolt, Indra would gain victory and enjoy the heavenly planets remaining in the material world for repeated birth and death. Indra wanted to gain victory over Vritrasura and thereby become happy, but that would not at all be happiness. The heavenly planets are just below Brahmaloka, but as stated by the Supreme Lord Krishna, Abrahma Bhuvanaloka Punaravartino Arjuna. Even if one achieves Brahmaloka, he must still fall to lower planetary systems again and again. What's another verse in Bhagavad Gita that says this? Same thing. Shine punya lokam matya lokam vishanti. Yes. You go up, and then your karma is finished, your good karma, and you come back down. However, if one goes back to Godhead, he never returns to this material world. So what's the verse for that? Acha chakcha deham punarjama naiti mam iti sorjuna and yangadva nanivartante dadama paramam mama. By killing Vritrasura, Indra would not actually gain. He would remain in the material world. Vritrasura, however, would go to the spiritual world. Therefore, victory was destined for Vritrasura, not for Indra. Verse 11. Aham samataya mano yathapana sankarsana sa sharanaravinde tadvacharanga lalitakram yapasha kachimuneyam yapavi haloka. By the force of your thunderbolt, I shall be freed of material bondage and shall give up this body and this world of material desires. Fixing my mind upon the lotus feet of Lord Sankarsan, I shall attain the destination of such great sages as Narada Muni, just as Lord Sankarsan has said. So why Lord Sankarsan? Why not somebody else? Yes. Right, his last life he was Chitraketu, and he got the blessings of Lord Sankarsan, that he would remember him and go back to him. Prabhupada says, the words Aham Samadaya Mana indicate the most important duty at the time of death is to concentrate one's mind. If one can fix his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, Vishnu, Sankarsan, or any Vishnumurti, his life will be successful. To be killed while fixing his mind the lotus feet of Sankarsan, Vritrasura asked Indra to release his Vajra, thunderbolt. He was destined to be killed by the thunderbolt given by Lord Vishnu. There is no question of its being baffled. So Prabhupada goes on, a devotee is always ready to give up his material body, described here as Gramya Pash, the rope of material attachment. The body is not at all good. It is simply a cause of bondage to the material world. Unfortunately, even though the body is destined for destruction, fools and rascals invest all their faith in the body and are never eager to return home back to Godhead. So why do people have so much faith in the body? Why does Prabhupada say it's not good, it seems? Yes?
Because it gives sense gratification.
It gives sense gratification, that's why it's not good. Why do they have faith in the body? Because it gives them sense gratification. Why so much faith, though? So much misery comes. They don't have knowledge of it. They don't know what's better sense gratification to please Krishna. They don't know the higher taste. So, what is Indra's mood here? Is he convinced? Do we know? We don't know. You won't know for a while. Burjan says, the mood of Indra is, you are encouraging me to use my thunderbolt, but you showed your prowess and defeated me when I attacked you with my club. So when I attack with the thunderbolt, you'll defeat me again. So Vritrasura is trying to convince him, no, it's all right. You know, the club wasn't so good, but the thunderbolt's good. Club didn't work. But I won't do it for the thunderbolt. I like the thunderbolt. You can use it, and I'll agree to die, and no problem. I won't catch the thunderbolt and throw it at you. So, this mood of, now he's ready to die, he's ready to give up his body. Who else? Are there any more verses like this by devotees? There was King Kulishekar. He was ready to give up his body. He says, now, yes?
Raj Pariksha,
yes. Bhishma Dev, same ones. Any new? Yes. And so this is Parikshit said, na sasadu mene na chirena takshika na lampa sakta savirakti karanam. This is good, now I can, this will be the cause of my indifference toward worldly things. Haridas Thakur, yes. He was ready to give up his body. Jesus Christ. So if it's good, then why don't we just give up our body right now? You know, some of these spiritual movements, they think, yes, just give up your body. That's the goal of life. So why don't we just do that? Yes?
Suicide's
another thing. Yes. You can't do it yourself. Yes? Yeah, it's better to use your body for the service of Krishna than to simply give it up like that. Yes?
Unless we serve here, we didn't develop the service mood, what are we going to do there?
Yes, yeah, unless we develop the service mood here, what are we going to do there? Yeah, one devotee came up to me and she was telling me, you know, this life is useless, but I want to go to where Prabhupada is and I want to serve him there. Yeah, I'm ready. I'm just going to go there and serve Prabhupada. I can't do anything here. So what would you say to such a devotee who says, someone told me that. She says, I'm ready. I'm ready to go. I'm just going to go and serve Prabhupada wherever he is. So what do you say?
Why not
here? Huh?
Why not here?
Yeah, that's what I said. Why not here? Why don't you, if you're ready to serve Prabhupada, then why not here? What are you going to do there if you can't do it here?
Work
now, samadhi later. Yes. People have foolish, even devotees, they have foolish ideas sometimes. They think, yeah, well, I can't do anything now, but you can surrender now too. Surrender means right now, not in the next life. When you're going to surrender in your next life. I'll go wherever Prabhupada is. Well, he's here right now, preaching. Yes.
You could say also this is why you couldn't complete your devotional service in previous life.
Right.
You delayed later.
Yeah, so the problem is in your last life you didn't finish, and now in this life you're not going to finish. So the same thing's going to happen in your next life, you're not going to finish. That's a good one. That's good. Because these things come up, you know, crazy ideas devotees have of how they can be very glorious. Yes, I'll give up my body, go to Prabhupada. Yeah. Sanatan Goswami, he thought the same way because he was full of sores. And his idea was to go under the wheel of the Rath cart. And what was Lord Chaitanya's answer to Sanatana Goswami when he had that plan? It's not your body. It's Krishna's body. It's my body, and I have things I want to do through your body. So Krishna, Prabhupada has things he wants to do through our bodies. So it's not ours. It's not our body. We just have to find out what he wants to do with us and do it. And then our life is successful. We have to find out what is the purpose of our birth in this world. It's not simply to enjoy and also try to do, of course, try to do some service, but you have to find out there is a purpose. And there's a reason why we all joined this movement. And when you find your purpose, when you find out that, then you're happy and your life is successful. Even if you don't finish it, even if you don't achieve it in this life, still you tried. So this is what's going on here. Verse 22. Pumsam kilai kanta tiyam svakanam yasam padau divi puma vasayam naratyate shodveka adhi mada kalirya sanam sampayasa. Persons who fully surrender the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and always think of his lotus feet are accepted and recognized by the Lord as his own personal assistants or servants. The Lord never bestows upon such servants the brilliant opulences of the upper, lower, and middle planetary systems of this material world. When one possesses material opulence in any of these three divisions of the universe, his possessions naturally increase his enmity, anxiety, mental agitation, pride, and belligerence. Thus, one goes through much endeavor to increase and maintain his possessions, and he suffers great unhappiness when he loses them. So why is Ritarsura talking about opulence and Opulence causes anxiety, mental agitation, pride. Why is he saying this, actually?
You want to get renounced on mood.
Okay, it's his mood of renunciation. Okay. And what else? Yes.
Yes.
He's preaching to Indra. You see, you're in so much anxiety, but don't you know what this is? This is, the Lord would never give his pure devotees this opulence. Yes. Tulayama lavena pina swargam napunara. So he's trying to preach to Indra. Please understand, these opulences will not make you happy. You want the kingdom, but what is the use? And also he's speaking for himself that I don't want the kingdom. He's trying to convince him. I don't need this. I've got the lotus feet of the Lord. I don't want your kingdom. Just kill me. You can have it. Nadanam, najanam, nasundarin. Yes. So then in the purport, Prabhupada quotes Gita. Yayatamam abhadyante tam stateva pajamiham amavartman vartante manusha parjasarsham. As devotees surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, son of Prita. Both Indra and Vritrasura were certainly devotees of the Lord, although Indra took instructions from Vishnu to kill Vritrasura. The Lord is actually more favorable to Vritrasura, because after being killed by Indra's thunderbolt, Vritrasura would go back to Godhead, whereas the victorious Indra would rot in this material world. So Prabhupada likes that word very much. For staying in the material world, you rot. R-O-T, rot. It's rotten place. Because both of them were devotees, the Lord awarded them the respective benedictions they wanted. Vritrasura never wanted material possessions, for he knew very well the nature of such possessions. To accumulate material possessions, one must labor very hard. And when he gets them, he creates many enemies, because this material world is always full of rivalry. If one becomes rich, his friends or relatives are envious. For Ekanta Bhaktas, unalloyed devotees, Krishna, therefore, never provides material possessions. A devotee sometimes needs some material possessions for preaching, but the possessions of a preacher are not like those of a karmi. A karmi's possessions are achieved as a result of karma, but those of a devotee are arranged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead just to facilitate his devotional activity. So what kind of possessions do you need for preaching? Computer. Yes, in this age of Kali, the computer is the essential companion for the preacher. Why computer?
Veda base.
All the books, because we have no memory. Yeah, if Vyasadeva were here today, he would be writing on computer and not in the palm leaves, because it's the age of computer. Okay, it's funny, I never thought of that. Yes, it's the age of forgetfulness. So the computer always remembers, right?
Sometimes
not. You can't always depend on the computer. And there are examples. It was so funny. This one devotee, she was just ready to start teaching, Nectar of Devotion. And her computer stopped working and she lost all her lectures and everything and all her notes. So she just had to go in cold to the class like that. Just imagine what it would be without computers. Yes. He will give for preaching to facilitate his devotional activities. Oh, you have experience. Okay, if you worship Gaur Nithai, this is the experience of Vanamali Prabhu. He will give you exactly what you need, not 1 rupee more and not 1 rupee less. I have that experience with Radha Krishna as well. Yes, not 1 rupee more, not 1 rupee less, yes. They try, huh? They're trying. It's like an addiction or what? Yes. They are successful, huh? Acha? Bhakti Vijayapur Maharaj. Wooden shoes. One gamsha. And passport and the gamsha. No suitcase.
Nothing.
So he travels like that and he doesn't have papers. Yeah, he's amazing. And he can speak the whole day, too. Non-stop.
Actually,
and you never see him reading.
Yeah,
his disciple.
Studying before lecture.
Never studying, preparing.
He's just
maybe previous life, or he could be a Shruti Dhara.
They have hard disk.
Yeah. He's got his own hard disk, right? Yeah. Yes? Yes. He did read for years and years. Yeah, okay, Shruti Dhara, so that's the explanation. He remembers. Photographic memory. Shruti Dhara. Huh? Yes? His disciples are managing. What's that? He has a computer in Mayapur. Gotcha. Okay, anyway, yes.
Use computer, don't depend on it.
Okay, in teacher training, they teach use the computer, but don't depend on it.
Yes.
That's why I have hard copy.
All the modern facilities.
All the modern facilities. Yes, because someday they won't be there. Actually, when I started teaching, then I had no computer. Like Bhagavad Gita, I taught, what is that? Bhakti Shastri, Bhagavad Gita. But I had all the books. I had Prabhupada's lectures. I had the books, so I did it that way. Yes? Prabhupada didn't use computers. Okay. The ultimate argument. Yes? He used the dictaphone. All right.
Yes.
He was ready to preach anywhere, anytime. Yes. If you preach a lot, if you preach like all the time, then it happens that way. Then you remember things and you get like that. You can do that. I asked Burijan one time, I said, oh, I wish I didn't have to study so much all the time, you know, to prepare for the class. He said, yes, well, if you did it in your last life, you wouldn't have to do it in this life. They told me. I said, okay, next life, no problem. Next life will be prepared. Yes, it's life after life, I'm sure. I'm sure that his piety and his memory and all this is life after life. So we don't want to rot. We want to preach in this world. So anything else besides computer that a preacher needs?
Sound system.
Yeah, except for Brajabihari and some devotees. They don't need sound system. His voice is loud enough. Who? Indradyumna Swami. They have tons and tons of sound system. Yes, in this age, preaching, you need sound system, and you also need a band, and you need pandal, so many things. Okay. Traveling preacher, yes? Okay, according to Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati, all a preacher needs is life. Prāṇa che jar, then what? I forgot it. Look it up. Prachar, something prachar. Yeah. If you have life, then you can preach. Prāṇa che jar, se hetu prachar. Oh, I got it. Se hetu, sa hetu, se jar. Sehe tu prachar. Oh, yeah, then you can preach. Prana chejar sehe tu prachar. Sehe tu prachar. That is the cause of a preacher, is life. Life. And what is the life? So what's the prana? Adi?
Spiritual enthusiasm.
Enthusiasm? Usaha?
Compassion?
Karuna?
Okay.
Conviction, faith, yes. Jitta, realization. Utsaha nishayat dhariyat, realization. Faith. So this is prana. This is the life of the preacher, actually, enthusiasm. Okay, so now you know what you need for preaching. Possessions for preacher. Krishna. Okay, you need... who said that? Vanamali? Vanamali says you need Krishna. That's what you need for preaching. Yes, if you have Krishna, then you have everything. The end of the purport. Because a devotee never uses material possessions for any purpose other than the service of the Lord, the possessions of a devotee are not to be compared with those of a karmi. Right. So, What is that verse in? Oh, I have something here from Bihad Bhagavatamrita by Prahlad Maharaj. And Prahlad Maharaj is showing how he is not favored by the Lord because he got the opulence of the kingdom. So he says, he quotes Bhagavatam. The Lord says, when I wish to favor someone, I make him lose his opulence. He said, Prahlad says, such statements as this are evidence, and so also are the statements of his exalted devotees. So this is Briha Bhagavatam 1.4.27. And Prahlad is citing Bhagavatam, where Krishna advises Indra, when Indra had made an offense, the Govardhan Leela. Krishna has made the same point in other contexts. Yasaham anagrami haishe tantanam shanai. And then he quotes this verse from Bhagavatam as well, Vritrasura. He's making that same point, Vritrasura. And Sudama, also he has a verse in 10.81.37. Paktaya chitra bhagavan hisampada rajam vibhutir na samartayat yaja adirka bodhaya vichakshana sayam pashyan nipatam tani nam mahod bhavan. To a devotee who lacks spiritual insight, the Supreme Lord will not grant the wonderful opulences of this world, kingly power and material assets. Indeed, in his infinite wisdom, the unborn Lord well knows how the intoxication of pride can cause the downfall of the wealthy. So verse 23. Chai barbikaya savikata asmad patir pitate purusha sushakra tatanameya bhagavat pashara yodurlavokinshanagacharamya. Our Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, forbids his devotees to endeavor uselessly for religion, economic development, and sense gratification. O Indra, one can thus infer how kind the Lord is. Such mercy is obtainable only by unalloyed devotees, not by persons who aspire for material gains. So this is quite interesting, because previously when the demigods and Indra met the Lord was preaching to Indra and the demigods that, you know, you should not ask for these things. And now Vritrasura is explaining what is the mood of the devotee and why they don't want these things. That these things they won't make you happy. These things, actually, what is the use of trying for dharma, artha, and kama? So just how kind the Lord is. He doesn't give these things. He gives something else. So what is the special mercy? Prabhupada explains there's a special mercy that the Lord gives to the unalloyed devotee, which Indra is not going to get. Yes. Doesn't give material. He saves him from hard labor, Prabhupada says, to achieve dharma, artha, and kama. He saves him from all this hard work. He saves him from envious people, because this is what people want. So Prabhupada says that, of course, if one wants such benefits, the Lord certainly awards them. Indra, for example, although a devotee, was not much interested in release from material bondage. Instead, he desired sense gratification and a high standard of material happiness in the heavenly planets. Vritrasura, however, being an unalloyed devotee, aspired only to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Lord arranged for him to go back to Godhead after his bodily bondage was destroyed by Indra. Vritrasura requested Indra to release his thunderbolt against him as soon as possible, so both he and Indra would benefit according to their proportionate advancement in devotional service. So what's the difference between the mood of Indra and Vritrasura? Yes?
Sakam and
Nishkam, or Akam. One is Nishkam, one is Sakam. That's one difference. That is the difference. So actually we're ruined. Why are we ruined by Dharma, Artha, and Kama, this path? Why is it bad? What's wrong with dharma, artha, and kama? Yeah?
They believe that kama will help to achieve moksha, but
kama will help to achieve moksha? I don't think so. Kama, okay. Kama, artha.
Dharma, artha, kama.
Dharma, artha, kama, and then moksha.
Deviates on the level of kama and
okay. So when they get their kama, it destroys their dharma. And they don't make it to moksha. Okay? Yes.
Keep away from the Lord.
It keeps you away from the Lord, yes. It keeps you here, and here is a way. Yes, Dhamma Krishna.
So only temporary relief.
Only temporary relief.
That's nothing to do with the nature of the soul.
Right, nothing to do with the real happiness of the soul. Can you just put this flip chart up to date? We'll go to 23, 24. Yeah, there we are. Okay, fine. No dharma artha kama moksha. So verse 24 will give us the essence of devotional service. So now there's a change, and we'll hear this in a commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. What is the, well, he will explain this change, verse 24. Now he's not talking to Indra anymore. He's addressing the Lord himself. Aham hare tava padai kamula dasani dasa bhavitas mi bhuya manas mareta supate kunangste grinitavak karma karotukaya. O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, will I again be able to be a servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? O Lord of my life, may I again become their servant, so my mind may always think of your transcendental attributes, my words always glorify those attributes, and my body always engage in loving service of your Lordship. So what words in Sanskrit are the most important in this verse, 24? Yes, dasanu daso bhavi tasmi. So why should we be servant of the servant? Why not be master of the master? Master of the master. Everybody wants to be master of the master. So if we are servant of the servant, we can hear from the devotees about the Lord. What's another benefit of being servant of the servant? Yes.
Become master of the master.
Okay, if we become servant of the servant, we become master of the master. How's that?
If you think of the master, then
your
mind.
Oh, it's your mind. Okay, if your mind is the master. So if you become servant of the servant, you become master of your mind. Okay, that's a good one. Yeah.
But that's all condition.
Okay, we should be servant of the servant because we are servant of the servant. We should be who we are. We are, this is our constitutional position, so we should be. We should accept who we are and not try to pretend for so many more lifetimes. Yeah. Oh, you get more mercy if you're servant of the servant than if you're directly, because there's two instead of one, so they'll both give you. Hare Purush. Even the master of all masters, who? Krishna aspires to be servant of the servant. And I had the thought, if you're servant of the servant, you become master of Krishna as well. You conquer him. You can conquer Krishna by being servant of the servant. Then you become master of the master in that way also. And Krishna, he's submissive to the love of his devotee. Damien.
Jesus Christ said that the last will be the first one.
The last will be the first. Okay, so if you want to be exalted, put yourself in the lowest position. Then you'll be first to go. Yes.
Yes,
Sutta Goswami, he was submissive to his spiritual master and he got all favors, he got all realization, spiritual realization. Okay, he's an example. We'll read a little of purport. This verse gives the sum and substance of devotional life. Okay, this is the essence, Prabhupada is saying, the essence of all devotional life. One must first become a servant of the servant of the servant. He added another one. Of the Lord, Das Anudas. Anudas. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised, he also showed by his own example, a living entity should always desire to be servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, maintainer of the gopis. Gopi Partu Parakamalayar Das Das Anudasa. This means, so here's what it means, that one must accept a spiritual master who comes in disciplic succession and is a servant of the servant of the Lord. So you have to accept a spiritual master who is servant of the servant. Under his direction, one must then engage one's three properties, namely body, mind, and words, Body should be engaged in physical activity under the order of the master. Mind should think of Krishna incessantly. And one's words should be engaged in preaching glories of the Lord. If one is thus engaged in loving service of the Lord, one's life is successful. So there is a commentary on this by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And this verse is quoted in Bhajan Rahasya by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in reference to Ayinandatanuja Kinkaram Patitam Mam. So this is the heading here is with the manifestation of bhava, a fixed service attitude is natural. So this verse exemplifies the manifestation of bhava and obtaining a fixed service attitude. So here, Vishwanath Chakravarti says, when Vritrasura saw that Indra was not throwing his thunderbolt at him, he thought, why should I speak to this Indra whom I see externally? Why should I not surrender myself to my Lord? The Lord then appeared to him in his meditation, and Vritrasura began to speak this prayer. So while Vritrasura was speaking, the Lord appeared in his heart. He could see him. He said, why should I speak to this nonsense Indra? So he started speaking directly to the Lord. When shall I once again become the most obedient servant of those who have taken exclusive shelter of your lotus feet? Tell me, please, how long will it take before this happens? I am burning up with anxiety. If you say, I'm coming soon to make your mind, choose any benediction, then I shall tell you what I desire. May my mind always remember you, O Lord of my life. May my words glorify your qualities. May my hands be engaged in massaging your feet, fanning you, and furnishing betelnut. In this way, I will serve you in body, mind, and words. So see the relationship between Vishwanath and Prabhupada's commentary, Prabhupada's purport, body, mind, and words. Prabhupada is saying that you take shelter of a pure devotee, a spiritual master, and he engages you body, mind, and words. So I thought it's a nice relationship between the two. So I'll just read one verse by Prahlad Maharaj, who he also prays the same way. This is in 7:9:28. Evam janani patitam prabhavahikope kama bikama manuya patapanta sanga kivat masat surashina bhagavan vihita soham katana vishije tavabhita sevam. My dear Lord, because of my association with material desires one after another, I was gradually falling into a blind well full of snakes, following the general populace. But your servant, Narada Muni, kindly accepted me as his disciple and instructed me how to achieve this transcendental position. Therefore, my first duty is to serve him. How could I leave his service? So when he was asked by Nisringadev, what do you want? He says, I just want to be the servant of the servant. That was his desire. Lord Shiva also prayed that in his prayers, let me be servant of a servant. So this is the desire of the devotees. What does Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur say in that famous prayer we sing every day? Yasya prasharad bhagavat prasharo. Yasya prasharad nagati kutopi. So Prabhupada explains in the purport of this verse by Prahlad that first you must be prepared to serve the spiritual master, and when qualified, automatically you're offered the platform of direct service to the Lord. So Prabhupada says, Prahlad Maharaj proposed he engaged in the service of Narada. He never proposed he engaged directly in the service of the Lord. This is the right conclusion. He says, how can I give up the service of my guru who has favored me in such a way I am now able to see you face to face? So verse 25. Nana kapishtam nacha paramishtyam na sarvapamam nadasaripatyam na yoga siddhir apunarpavam va samanjasatva virahayakamshe. Verse 25. O my Lord, source of all opportunities, I do not desire to enjoy in Dhruvloka, heavenly planets, or the planet where Lord Brahma resides, nor do I want to be the supreme ruler of all the earthly planets or lower planetary systems. I do not desire to be master of the powers of mystic yoga, nor do I want liberation if I have to give up your lotus feet. So first, before he was preaching to Indra, but now he's directly speaking to the Lord, that this is my desire. A pure devotee never desires to gain material opportunities by rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord. A pure devotee desires only to engage in loving service to the Lord in constant association of the Lord and his eternal associates, as confirmed, stated in the previous verse, Dasanu Daso Pavitasme, confirmed by Narottam Das Thakur. Tadir chana shevi bhaktashani vash janame janame hoy e avilash. To serve the Lord and servants of his servants in association of devotees is the only objective of a pure and alloyed devotee. So I have some comments again by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur on this verse. And this verse is quoted by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in relationship to Nadhanam, Najanam, Nasundarim. So the comment by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur: when I am separated from you, my heart and mind burn with distress. What will heaven or any of the other worldly gain do to relieve this pain? If, on the other hand, you fulfill my prayers and allow my tongue to always glorify you, my hands to always engage in your service, and my mind to always remember you, then it makes no difference whether you place me in heaven or in hell, for these boons alone will fulfill me. So he just wants to use his body, mind, and words in the service of the Lord. In the next chapter you'll hear this afternoon by Burijan Prabhu, says, a person fixed in devotional service of the Lord Hari swims in the ocean of nectar. For him, what is the use of water in small ditches? So the ocean of nectar, Srila Prabhupada says, he just wants to associate with the Lord and the inhabitants of Vrindavan, Srimati Radharani, the gopis, Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda, Krishna's friends and servants. He wants to associate with Krishna's atmosphere of Vrindavan's beauty. These are the highest ambitions of a devotee of Krishna. So therefore, he doesn't care about the ditch of this material world. Another reference to the ditch is given in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Adi Lila, chapter 8, verse 79. This is Chaitanya Bhagavat. And it's describing Jagannath Mishra, considering the happiness of merging into the Lord to be most insignificant. So even the happiness of liberation is nothing for the devotee. And there's quotes a verse from, I think, Nectar of Devotion. Brahmananda bhaved esha chit parada guni krita naiti bhakti skambodhe paramanu tulamapi. If Brahmananda, the bliss of merging into Brahman, were multiplied 100 trillion times, it would still not equal even an atomic fragment of the ocean of bliss felt in devotional service. So this is the mood of the devotee, the mood of Vrijashara. And he's considered, this section here is considered one of the highest in Srimad Bhagavatam also. He's very high, ranked very high. So now we can see the picture. You can flip the flip chart. We've got two pictures. One is here by Bhagavat, and one small one here by my daughter about the mood here. Yeah, it's hard to see. And you have the three different examples. They're thinking in different ways. Verse 26. Ajata paksha eva mataram kaga stanyam yatavat sadata shurata priyam vyeva vyushitam vishanaha manoravindaksha ridikshate. O lotus eyed Lord, as baby birds that have not yet developed their wings always look for their mother to return and feed them, as small calves tied with ropes await anxiously the time of milking, when they will be allowed to drink the milk of their mothers, or as a morose wife whose husband is away from home always longs for him to return and satisfy her in all respects, I always yearn for the opportunity to render direct service unto you. So this is his mood in devotional service. Prabhupada says, a pure devotee always yearns to associate personally with the Lord and render service unto him. The examples given in this regard are most appropriate. A small baby bird is practically never satisfied except when the mother bird comes to feed it. A small calf is not satisfied unless allowed to suck the milk from the mother's udder. And a chaste devoted wife whose husband is away from home is never satisfied until she has the association of her beloved husband. So Bhurijan Prabhu explains these examples very nicely. So I'll tell you his explanation, which may be from the Acharya's commentaries. So the baby bird, he's waiting for some worms and something the mother is going to bring. But the example of the calf is even more intimate because he's going to drink the milk directly from the mother. So this is more intimate and a better example than the bird example. But actually the wife example is the best example because she just gives everything to her husband. She's only thinking how to serve him and thinking of his needs and his well-being. So this example of the wife actually explains Vritrasura's mentality. He's burning for Krishna's association. What's that? Madhurya. Yes, he's saying the wife, as a wife, longs for the husband. Could be. Do the Acharyas say anything about that, Adi Purush, which rasa Vritrasura is in? They don't say, okay. If he gives that example of a wife attached to the husband. But Rupa Goswami also gives that example, right? It's just like a wife with a paramour. Wife who has a paramour, so the devotee thinks of Krishna. Verse 27. Mamo tama shloka janeshu sakyam sansara chakre pramata sukarmavi tanmaya yatmat majadara gehe shasakta chitasyanana tabuyat. Oh my Lord, my Master, I'm wandering throughout this material world as a result of my fruitive activities. Therefore, I simply seek friendship in the association of your pious and enlightened devotees. My attachment to my body, wife, children, and home is continuing by the spell of your external energy, but I wish to be attached to them no longer. Let my mind, my consciousness, and everything I have be attached only to you. So Vritrasura is about to die, and these are his last desires. He's praying to the Lord very intensely in the mood of separation. And so in one purport of Queen Kunti's prayers, 1841, Prabhupada says that to cut off the family affection means to broaden the field of activities. If you don't cut off your family affection, Prabhupada says, no one can be qualified as a brahmana, a king, a public leader, or a devotee of the Lord. Very heavy statement there by Srila Prabhupada. You can't be a devotee unless you cut off all family affection. So Prabhupada says, sometimes it experienced the Lord out of his special affinity towards a weak devotee breaks the family affection by force of circumstances arranged by his all-powerful energy. So sometimes it happens that you get separated from your family, and that's the way he breaks it. And sometimes it happens that you don't get separated and you fight with your family members. That's another way he does it. Just in different ways. And sometimes it happens that you sacrifice everything for your family and then they don't reciprocate in the same way. Huh? Either voluntarily or forcefully. So I was just thinking of examples of how the Lord cuts it. The Lord cuts it. He shows you. He reveals, just like it says, the force of material enjoyment. So if you live in family life, then you can experience that very easily. How if you're the one who's supplying the money, then when the money's finished, then it becomes very difficult for the family members to see you in the same way. And when you have the money, then it's, okay, give me this, give me this, give me this. I need this, we don't have this, we don't have this, we don't have this. And then you say, we don't have money. Oh, now what? Yes?
I have a question. He's mentioning...
Yes, we're at the end. Well, it sounds like it, if he mentions them.
But it was just...
He came from the fire, and I guess in between he must have had a body, a wife, with his children, and a home. In between coming from the fire and coming over here.
So it was not immediate?
I guess so. It's not immediate.
So
he says body, mind. What does he say? Atma, Atmaja, Dara, Geheshu?
Rather, it's the teaching.
Yes. Yeah, there was some time. There was time, was there. He had time. And in the heavenly, you know, in the higher planets, the children grow up in one day. So it's quite possible for him to have...
descendants.
Oh, chart of descendants. There's no descendants in the chart for him. He's Chitraketu. Okay. Well, I would take it as present, though. Yeah, it could be. She's saying previous life. He could be referring, but generally you're talking about this life. Yep. So the question is the devotion he's manifesting now, is it from previous life or is it from this life? And that will be the question of Maharaj Parikshit in chapter 14, I believe. That how did such a demon get such devotion? That will be his question. And the answer will be chapter 14, 15, 16, and 17. Four chapters will be the answer. How did such a demon become such a devotee? Yeah, it's previous life. Previous. They were talking previous life. He got the mercy of Angira, Narada, and Sankarshan as well. So, yeah, the answer is it was previous life. He didn't, in this life, doesn't talk about his, he was a demon. And he was acting like a demon. He went off to kill Indra. He was not helping the demigods. Demigods are on Vishnu's side. So he was against the demigods. Yes. Indra waited for a whole year. Yeah, he's a rishi. Yeah, he's a demigod. Yeah, we had his wife was demon. Yes, don't forget. His mother's a demon. But Vritashura appeared from the fire, actually. Yeah, he came from the fire. So in that sense, although his father was Tvashta, actually, his father was the fire. Yeah, somebody opposed to Sura, he's Asura.
That's why, because he's against Indra, that's why it is.
Yeah, because he's against Indra, that's why he's a demon. And he's born in demoniac mother. And also, yes, he's against the demigods, then you're Asura. And he looked like a demon, too. He acted like a demon. But he had pure devotional service. And this proves that bhakti is ahaituki apratyata. It's never broken, it's never lost, and it's causeless. Can appear even in a demoniac person. Yes, he was acting very... He was killing all this. He was attacking the soldiers of the demigods. He was roaring and scaring everyone. You know, devotees don't do that. Yes, Dhruva also killed the yakshas. Still a pure devotee. Yeah, see, he was frightening everyone. Devotees don't go around roaring and making the universe afraid. He's acting like a demon. His behavior, yes. Yeah.
They have no other shelter, actually.
Yes, the birds, the calf, and the wife, they have no other shelter. So they're completely helpless.
If bird mother will not come, they will actually die.
Yes, if the mother bird doesn't come, they will die. The calves will die without the milk of their mother.
And the chaste wife
also, without the husband, she will. Yes, if we're thinking, okay, no problem, something happens, I got my bank balance, or I've got my intelligence, or I've got my friends, no problem.
I have experience in it.
So if a kid came from a rich family and supported the Gurukul by buying a generator, buying things. That kid would be the worst.
Because he would not be able to be submissive in his
He couldn't be submissive in his behavior. He
always knew that he doesn't depend on the teachers.
Yeah, he always knew he didn't depend on the teachers.
Yeah, so whatever teachers asked him to do, he would say, complain to my father.
I'll tell my father about you.
So once I was a teacher, once I was complaining to our management.
You're complaining to the management.
Why don't we kick out this boy?
Why don't we kick out this boy? Troublemaker.
And they said it's boy.
We will change the teacher who cannot tolerate the boy.
Then boy, because of his father, we can keep together.
Because of his father, we have the school. These are the hard facts of life.
The boy couldn't learn because he had some other shelter.
The point is, the boy couldn't learn. He couldn't be submissive because he had another shelter. He had his money, his rich father.
Some kids who came were best students, actually.
Yeah, so the ones who came with nothing, who were very poor, were submissive to the teachers, and they were the best students. Yes, we see that. We see that. And my son's Gurukul also, like the worst ones were the temple president's sons. And him, for some reason, he wasn't a temple president's son, but he was an independent thinker. So he got in trouble also. Yes, Dhamma Krishna.
Just think again in verse 10, where it's described Rudra,
verse 10, yeah. Rudra and Yamaraj, I was wondering about that. Oh, you know a story, Markandeya Rishi?
Yeah, he was like, his parents didn't know he was a child, so...
Oh, his parents...
He worshipped Shiva.
Oh, the parents of Markandeya Rishi had no child. They were worshipping Lord Shiva.
And so one in 9 years.
Okay, so they told... Lord Shiva said, you'll get a child, you'll only live for 9 years.
And then anything.
So the child was growing up, and one day he saw his mother and father crying.
So he asked, why you're crying?
Yes, why are you crying?
So
they said, you're supposed to die now, ninth year. Okay, so the boy was very smart. He started worshipping Lord Shiva, and when Yamaraj came to take him, he embraced the Shiva Linga. Yamaraj wanted to take him. So Lord Shiva got angry and smashed Yamaraj to pieces.
After he revived him.
And then later he revived him. Okay, so this may be the story. That's the story of Antaka and... Yes, Adipurush. Oh, the time of Pralaya. Okay, the Acharyas say, this is verse 6, 10, 15. Uh-huh. Okay. Viraragavacharya and? Giritarila. Acharya. Oh. At the time of Pralaya, Lord Shiva chases Yamaraj and he's quite capable of killing him. Okay, who says this? Shukadeva Goswami says this. Another explanation could be the destruction of Tripura. Okay, so the Tripura was destroying the world, so it could also be called Antaka, and so therefore Lord Shiva destroyed Antaka, Tripura, which was made by Mayadev, Maya. Okay, thank you. So here we have the Acharyas, which we should take as...
This is also an interesting story.
Yeah, his story is also interesting too. But I think this one is much more at the time of Pralaya, that's worse.
Acharyas.
The Acharyas. Yes, the Vanamali?
They have temple, they have the Yamaraj.
Okay, in Kumbakonam, nearby, there is a temple in South India where Lord Shiva chased Yamaraj. Is it the story?
Yeah, the story.
The story which Dhamana Krishna told. Then it's happened there.
Yeah.
And so every year they have a festival where Lord Shiva chased Yamaraj.
It's time of Pralaya,
time of Pralaya?
This is connected with Markandeya.
No, the one in South India is connected with Markandeya. But the Acharyas are talking about Pralaya, which is the end of the universe, destruction. No, not Markandeya, no. That's different, Pralaya. That's just the end of day of Brahma.
Yeah.
Yeah, 9 kalpas. So from 9 years to 9 kalpas. He really got an extension of his visa in the material world. We don't want extension, though, do we? Yes?
Another one, this last verse reminded me.
Last verse. Yes, exactly. I have it here, actually. Yeah, I'll quote that. Jaime nanya vishaya madhir matupate kasake utemi pahataraha gange valkamadanguchi. O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganga forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn to you without being diverted to anyone else. 1842. So Prabhupada, he comments that relations of the soul established in relation with the Supreme Soul are factual relations. So when Kunti Devi wanted to cut off the family relation, she meant to cut off the relation of the skin. Skin relation is the cause of material bondage, but relation of the soul is the cause of freedom. Relation of soul to soul can be established by via medium of relation with the super soul. Seeing in darkness is not seeing, but seeing by the light of the sun means to see the sun and everything else which is unseen in darkness. That is the way of devotional service. So that was the purport of 1842. Madan Gopal? Tatwasandarbha.
It explains there that there's certain qualities that define what is the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Certain qualities that define what is Srimad Bhagavatam.
After this talks about, you know, what is Mahaprana, just
10 topics. Oh, okay. So this pastime, that's a very nice comment, that the pastime of Vitashura establishes what is a Purana. So if it to be a Purana, it has to have the story of Vritrasura.
The
Mahapurana. Oh, Bhagavatam. Mahapurana.
And that's from the
Matsya. Oh, from the Matsya Purana. To be a Mahapurana, Srimad Bhagavatam, has to have the pastime of Vritrasura. Okay, to be a Mahapurana, you have to have this pastime. Yes, it shows so many things. It shows his exaltedness, and it shows how bhakti can be found anywhere. What else does it show? It shows the exaltedness of Vritrasura. It shows that bhakti is a high tukiya pratyata. What else does this these prayers show? What other lessons? What do they show us? Yes.
He's also well wisher of his enemies.
He's well wisher of his enemy. Okay. What else does it show? It shows us the highest goal. What should be the desire of the devotee? So what should be the desire then of the devotee? What does Vritrasura explain or reveal to us? The desire of the devotee? Servant of the servant. That should be the desire. The perfection of spiritual love. Bhava, yes. Pure love. What is pure love? How to express pure love? Just like a husband, a wife for the husband, the birds for the mother. He's waiting. He's waiting to see the Lord. He's waiting to be in the Lord's presence and serve Him. So to become... So some of us in Vrindavan, we don't wait. We start imagining that we are already in some service with the Lord. Yes?
Another thing about that verse about the birds,
the birds,
calves,
yeah,
etc., is that it's described in this shows how the Lord maintains the devotee.
Ah, the Lord maintains the devotee. Poshanam, okay? It also shows Poshanam, how the Lord maintains this devotee. Okay? Yeah?
So he says, such a body, it's because of having such a body, even. Strike by club, the Airava was 14 yards. Even he has powerful body, but still he wants to become separate.
He
is so powerful, but he's
so Vanamali is struck by the fact that he has such a huge body. He can even throw Airavata's elephant back so many yards, but he wants to be servant of the servant. Such a huge, huge body. Yes. Yeah, that's an interesting point. That if we're a weak person, then it's natural. Yeah, okay, I'm servant, no problem. Somebody big comes, or somebody powerful comes. Of course, okay, I'm servant. But somebody, he's so powerful, and he's got so much shakti. He wants to be servant. So, what an example for those who have power in this world, who have strength. Nobody can be as strong as Vritrasura. But he, what does he want? Such a big, powerful person. Just like there's some movie star who is Mr. Universe. And like my son and different people, they think, oh, he's so great, I'd like to be like him. But actually, so Vritrasura is much greater. He's got the whole universe. And what does he want that we have to see? Just like Lakshmi, what did she want? She wanted to become a gopi. And so Vritrasura wants to be servant of the servant. These very powerful personalities who have everything. He doesn't want any opulence. He doesn't want anything. Even though he covers the universe, he doesn't want the universe. Okay? Yes? Adipurush. Okay. Jiva Goswami comments 6.11.26. from Priti Sundarbha. 6:11. Yeah, these verses are wonderful verses. 6:11:26 is the baby birds again. Oh, is it in English?
Yeah,
it's great.
Translation.
Okay. All right. Srimad Bhagavatam, the word Ajata Paksha means baby birds whose wings are still undeveloped, who have thus have no power to fly and are not independent. So they can't fly themselves and they're not independent. These baby birds take shelter of their mother, Mataram, and their mother is very merciful to them. It is seen that baby birds have great love, priti, for their mothers. With the same kind of love, Ritashura here yearns to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, priti. In this example, the baby birds are nourished by the mother. By her, their lives are maintained. By her, they are made happy. However, if the reader is displeased with this example and has no faith in it, then the speaker of this verse gives another example, an example that begins with the word stanyam. This is the example of the calf who yearns to attain its mother's udder, stanyam. The word stanyam here means udder, particular part of a cow's body. By the mother cow's udder, the calf is nourished and delighted. This example is better than the preceding example of the birds. Tied up by the human master, the small calf cannot approach its mother's udder. And even I see in Mayapur, when I was in Mayapur, they put a big something on the cow's mouth so she can't drink the... They put the cow and calf together in the day, but then they have like a mask or something. Yeah, two sticks, or they put something on the mouth so then every time she tries to drink, she can't get it. The whole day, like, she gets so frustrated, the calf. By the mother cow's udder, the calf is nourished and delighted. This example is better than the preceding example of the birds. Tied up by the human master, a small calf cannot approach its mother's udder. Therefore, for a long time, the calf is troubled by hunger, shudartha. This example is better than the previous one, for in a cow's body, there is a greater opportunity to manifest affection. So the cow, she's so affectionate to her calf, licking. However, if one feels the example of the cow and calf, an example of the baby bird and mother are too different in cause and effect from relationship of devotee and Supreme Lord, then another example is given in this verse, an example that begins with the word priyam. Here the example is given of two steadfast lovers whose love never changes, who love each other in youth, in old age, and up to the moment of death. In this example, the morose Vishana wife, Priya, longs to see Didikshate, her beloved husband, Priyam, who is away from home, Vishitam. Here Vitrasura says, as she longs to see her husband with her own eyes, so my heart longs to see you. In the first two parts of this analogy, the baby, bird, and calf are themselves the agent that performs the action. However, in the last part of the analogy, it is not Vritishara himself, but rather his heart that performs the action. So it's different. The analogy here is of the variety called Uleka. In this way, the unchanging love of Vritishara's heart is described. He wishes his heart may become like a bumblebee drawn to the sweetness of the lotus-eyed Supreme Lord. By this Uleka analogy is described the devotees being maintained by the Lord and devotees finding happiness in the Lord. So then he speaks, thinking good fortune of directly seeing the Lord is an impossible attainment, Vritishura, his eyes filled with tears, speaks the prayer in verse 27. So prema. It says this is prema. Okay, you want?
Yeah, actually, it shows the three levels of prema.
Shows the three levels of prema.
Because the bird wants something that's separate from the mother.
Okay, the bird wants something that's separate from the mother.
A worm.
Mm-hmm.
And then the calf wants milk, which is inside the mother's body.
Yeah.
Still, it's could be separated.
So the calf wants milk, which is inside the mother's body, but can still be separated.
But the wife wants the husband.
The wife wants the husband.
So there's three different levels.
Like Ritushara wants Krishna. And only Krishna will satisfy him.
And Nishan Chakradila writes also that the wife serves the Lord, the husband, with all her senses.
Okay, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes that the wife serves the Lord with all her senses, or the husband.
And he quotes the verse saying that with the mind she remembers
The husband.
With the words she speaks of his good qualities.
With the words she speaks his good qualities
and
about.
With the body she serves.
And with the body she serves.
So in the same way, Ritra Sura says that wife serves by Dasya, Sakya, and Shingara.
Okay, the wife serves by Dasya, Sakya, and Shingara.
But I want to serve at least just in Dasya.
He says, but I want to serve just in Dasya. Okay,
and
Dasya.
Dasya, Sakya,
Shingara. Shingara. Dasya, Sakya, and Shingara. Three levels. So the bird, the calf, and the wife, there are three levels of prema. Thank you. Anything else on these verses? They're wonderful. Wonderful verses. Dhamana Krishna? No, okay. So we can, yes. Yeah, it has been since the last half hour. Yes, time for questions. Unless, if you haven't already realized that. Yes.
I
forgot. Oh. That's really good. This is good. It was time for questions, but he forgot his question. Okay, you have one.
11:23.
11:23. Okay, in the purport it says that Lord Krishna certainly fulfills the desires of the devotee. Okay, and you've also read in a previous verse that the Lord never fulfills the desires of the devotee because then he's obliged to surrender. And in what way does he never fulfill the desires of the devotee? What were you thinking of? Ah, so he doesn't fulfill because then he purchases.
He takes all what he has.
He takes all everything away what he has. Okay. So what would you say to this question? I have something to say, but do you have Adi Purush? When you subscribe to the mobile phone service,
there are different plans.
Tariff plans. Okay, one you pay more total but less per minute. And you can have low total but you get less a lot per minute.
So in the same way with Krishna there are also different tariff plans.
So there's different tariff plans with Krishna. Yeah, tamam prapadyante, tam zadaya bhajamiham. And do you know them, Hari Purush? Yes? Tell us about Krishna's tariff plans. Okay, Adi Purush, what are they?
One wants to be a
Vraja Bhakta. So you have to be ready to be quite renounced if you want to be Vraja Bhakta. You want to be a demigod, enjoying a pious way. It's a separate plan there. So he will fulfill your desire if you want to be a demigod. No problem, very easy. It's very easy, that's the easy plan. If you want to be a demigod, no problem. He needs demigods, he needs people to manage. Then you have to stay here and rot. Rot, yes? Oh, you remembered your question. Well, wait, is he satisfied? Are you satisfied with that answer? What was I going to say? I don't know if I can remember now. It's one of those days. It's eclipse. We're being eclipsed here. Okay, let me think. What was your question again? It's about...
Does he give or does he not?
Yes, we were reading actually one purport one day where it says that if... Yes, there's a difference between Sakam devotees. Some Sakam devotees They're in a lower level, and they really, really want. And the Lord gives, He gives them what they want just to increase their faith. In the, yes, I pray, the Lord gives. But there's a higher level, it says sincere. If a devotee sincerely prays to the Lord but has some desire, then He takes away everything, the material things away. And He gives him only His Charinamrita, His lotus feet. So it's a difference between sincerity. If one is very sincere and he's doing devotional service and he's worshiping the Lord, he has some material desires, but he's sincere. And he really, he knows this is not really the best thing, but still he's going to the Lord. And the Lord takes it. Yeah.
So, in case of Indra, Krishna should be in disfavor instead of just being more material in this world, because
he's not so sincere, I think.
What?
Krishna's
always taking his side.
Yes, Krishna is on his side, that's right. Vishnu is on his side because that's what Indra wants. Indra wants the heavenly planet. So in that sense, the Lord is on his side.
Externally,
he's on his side, and externally, Indra is going to be victorious. The Lord, he will win because the Lord's on his side. And Vitrasura will die. But actually, it's not real victory. Adi Purush?
He also chastised Indra. He said,
yes.
Yeah. He kind of encouraged him to subscribe for a different planet.
Yes, he encouraged Indra, you know, why are you taking this heavenly planet? This is not good. You should ask for a pure devotional service plan. And Vitrasura is the one who actually will tell him all about it. He's his representative. And he will explain the plan. Because that's what he's going for. He's going for the back to Godhead, eternal life plan.
Different program.
Different program, yes. Different, and he will have. So actually, the real Vitrasura is going to get the real thing, and Indra is going to get the shadow of reality. He'll get some temporary relief, and then he'll stay there, and again he'll have problems. Again, the demons will come, or something will happen. He'll go after someone's wife, or who knows? He's always getting in trouble. And so he's getting temporary relief. Now he's in trouble again. He's getting temporary relief. But then as soon as he kills Vitrasura, again he's going to be in trouble. Just as soon as he kills Vitrasura, then all the reactions will come. Now Vitrasura, he's getting the real thing. He's getting Krishna. He's getting the spiritual world. So real victory is with Vitrasura. Yes? It wasn't Vishwarupa's father's plan. His plan was to kill Indra. But he made a mistake. But it looks like it's a conscious plan of the Lord to preach to Indra, as well as, you know, Indra will learn, actually. Indra will learn the lesson. We'll see. In chapter 13, Indra will be very sorry he killed Vitrasura.
So it was actually mercy of the Supreme Lord Vishnu,
yes,
to Indra. So
yeah, it's mercy to Indra to give him association of a pure devotee. Mm-hmm. He got the association, and it seems like the Lord was hinting in his chastising the demigods, you should want pure devotional service. And then he showed by the example of Vitrasura actually how a devotee desires, what is a pure devotee's mood. It was really the mercy of the Lord on Indra in that sense, to have the association of Vitrasura, pure, unalloyed devotee of the Lord. It wasn't Tvashta's idea at all. Tvashta had a different idea, kill Indra. But it wasn't to be. Indra is not supposed to be killed. He has to live, you know, well, how many? 72 yuga cycles. He has to live for a life of Manu. Then with the change of Manu, then there's the next Indra. Change of Indra. He has to live. He cannot die. Okay, any other questions or comments on this? Yes.
Many purposes.
Yes, Krishna fulfills many purposes with one shot. So Vitrasura is...
So you have to expect that there was something in Vaishnava.
Yes, there is something in it for Indra. And what was in it for Indra was this nice association in the middle of a battlefield. Mm-hmm. He got all these great instructions. And he did actually understand them. Yes. Yeah, well, at first it wasn't, because he didn't know. The first hesitancy was he wasn't sure the thunderbolt. Yeah. Now he'll be hesitant.
It's like, this person is way more advanced than me.
Yeah, this person's
so
way more advanced
like
than me.
The process of extracting to me more advanced.
He's much more advanced, right.
So
rising of his need and desire to kill him.
Yeah, he doesn't want to kill. He feels bad to kill him, actually. And then he'll have to preach to him again, I think, in the 12th chapter. You know, again he starts, and then we get another message. They start to fight, and then another message comes. He cuts off one of Ritishira's arms. And then something happens. Ritishira does something and injures again. Oh, my God, you know, he can't do anything. So he has to preach to him again. No, don't worry, fight. This afternoon, it'll be the same thing again. Even after he has no arm, one arm is cut off and he has to preach to Indra. It's just like, anyway, such is the life of a great devotee. Any other questions or comments? Today's eclipse. Everyone should go for a bath in Jamuna today. Anytime. He says the eclipse starts at 4. Yes? Sharanya. But I think Burjan's going to teach at 4, so... Yes, Burjan is... Oh, I'm glad you met him today. I met him day before yesterday, so he was telling me he was going to come. So at 4 o'clock, you might have to do it before 3:30. Oh. Okay, well, yeah, you'll have to think of a different time.
So
2 o'clock. Okay, so Burjan will be back at 4. And he will give you all the arguments this afternoon of Ritishira's further preaching and victory. Okay? Anything else? All glories to Srila Prabhupada.